Good afternoon. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Leah Trinidad, with this week's TV Guide magazine. A few of the articles I'm going to cover this week are the Rausch Review, Cheers and Jeers, and the highlights for the coming week. I'll start with the cover story, which is about NCIS New Orleans. Why Pride Pulled the Trigger. A buried trauma from his past has been eating away at the NCIS New Orleans hero. How Bad Will It Get Before the Shocking Truth Comes Out? By Kate Hahn. Bang. In December's mid-season finale of NCIS New Orleans, head honcho Dwayne Pride, played by Scott Bakula, shot and killed a murderous cult leader, maybe in cold blood. A proverbial nasty piece of work, the man was kneeling, hands up, gun tucked into his waistband. He had also recently taken the life of beloved NCIS agent Christopher LaSalle, played by Lucas Black, and was hinting Pride's daughter and his girlfriend could be next. But this death occurred off-camera with no witnesses. He could have been reaching for his weapon, Bakula asserts, parroting his character's explanation to his colleagues. Why Pride Pulled the Trigger, and the bigger question of why he goes to such great lengths to protect the people he loves, will be answered over the next four episodes. When the drama returns on its new night, Sunday, the Big Easy lawman dives deep into his own history and subconscious to explore those unsettling hallucinations about a man in a red suit, which began after kidnappers drugged him with LSD last season. Flashbacks tell the surprising backstory. That experience triggered this deep-seated trauma from his past. These are childhood memories having to do with his mother, Mena, and father, Cassius, now deceased, hence executive producer Jan Nash. What Pride is dealing with is psychological, which almost makes it scarier, chimes in fellow executive producer Christopher Silber. If there's a bad guy after him, he knows how to take that, but this is coming from the inside. And it's coming when he really needs to be on his game. In the drama's February 16th return, NCIS agent Sebastian Lund, played by Robert Kirkovich, infiltrates a group of plotting white supremacists, a big step forward in fieldwork for the forensics nerd, with support from polyglot Hannah Khoury, played by Nekar Zadegan, and tough talker Tammy Gregorio, played by Vanessa Ferlito. Even then, Pride grabs a spare moment to start teasing out the identity of Red, enlisting computer ace Patton Plame, played by Daryl Chill Mitchell, to create a composite sketch. At first, Pride's road to self-discovery goes nowhere, but over time, the clues he finds make him nervous about what else he might uncover. When a female assassin comes to town, Plame, who becomes what Bakula calls a little bit of a dog with a bone in terms of Pride's recovery, offers some insight during a long stakeout. Patton reminds him he's not someone who runs away from things that are scary, Nash says. The boss man has more reasons to push on. Pride's stress and lack of sleep and focus catch up to him, and not in a good way, Bakula says. He realizes the distraction is putting other people at risk. Pride eventually returns to Dr. Beth Tanaka, played by Angel Desai, first recommended by his confidant, Coroner Dr. Loretta Wade, played by CCH Pounder, who prescribes a cutting-edge treatment known as psychedelic-assisted therapy. We decided to do something very topical right now, which is to treat trauma with a microdose of LSD. We go back to the thing that caused the visions and use it to unlock the mystery, Nash says. It all comes to a head in the trippy March 8th episode, when Pride goes on a journey into his mind to figure out what the man in the red suit is trying to tell him. It's a wild ride. The story called for specific visuals and sound design, but also a unique emotional touch, says episode writer and executive producer Chad Gomez-Creasy. Part of the hour was shot in freezing mid-December along the Mississippi River. The sequence involved a street fair, two bands, and nearly 100 extras with everyone, Bakula included, shivering in t-shirts due to the springtime air date. It was such an atypical storyline for our show, we felt the audience might need to be grounded in a traditional case as well, Creasy adds. So while Pride is off on his own, the team searches for a missing Marine and meets a new compatriot. TV Guide magazine can reveal exclusively that the cast addition is Charles Michael Davis, a.k.a. charming, confident, even justifiably cocky Quentin Carter, who transfers to the New Orleans office at Pride's request. Of course, Pride does ultimately learn why he's been seeing red. The revelation is powerful and devastating, Bakula says, and shakes Pride to his core. How does he pick up the pieces and put himself back together again and not curl up in a corner? Silber has an answer to that. Dwayne Pride, at his core, cannot help but be a savior figure. That is how he's made, he says. Pride is like, this is who I am. I need to accept that and make peace with it. NCIS New Orleans, Sunday, February 16th, 10, 9 Central on CBS. And there is a sidebar with this story. The new guy. He's good at his job, competitive, and he likes to stand on his own, says Charles Michael Davis of high-achieving agent Quentin Carter, who joins the NOLA team on the March 8th episode. An ex-Marine from a military family, Carter fills the slot left by dear departed Christopher LaSalle, played by Lucas Black. We knew we needed someone exciting who could challenge the team and Pride, says exec producer Christopher Silber. Quentin has this history of moving from post to post, doing great things, but then pissing someone off and getting moved again. On his first case, he takes over. By Kate Hahn. And next is The Rausch Review by Matt Rausch. Briar Patch. Everything's bigger and stranger in USA's bizarre Texas mystery. It's always a hot time in the old Texas town of San Bonifacio, a.k.a. St. Disgrace, where the temperature hovers around 100 degrees. The perfect climate for digging up rabbit holes of corruption and murder. Bread knife weather, one resident calls it. When you crank the burner this high, they don't even bother reaching for the pointy stuff before they start stabbing each other. Or blowing up cops in their cars, which is how the perilously twisty intrigue of Briar Patch gets underway. Adapting Ross Thomas's 1984 novel, successfully gender-switching the lead to a female, into a close-ended story, the first of a planned anthology, this is like a sweaty Fargo. It piles on the quirks amid the Baroque suspense, so you're never quite sure when it's okay to laugh. You will anyway, thanks to the clever writing and outrageous plotting of executive producer Andy Greenwald, working with Sam Esmail, known for Mr. Robot, whose stylized way with sound, music, and Baroque visuals is a strong influence. In this environment, it almost seems natural to see a zebra in a parking lot or a tiger prowling a hotel hallway, all recent escapees of the local zoo. For the sultry, sullen investigator Allegra Dill, played by a glamorously slow-burning Rosario Dawson, the town is a poisonous s-hole. She thought she'd escaped long ago. Returning to her roots after her younger sister, a police officer, is killed by a car bomb, Allegra seethes in quiet fury as her search for the truth keeps being derailed by new layers of bizarre mystery. Adding to her frustration is an assignment from her boss, a smug senator, to get intel from Jake Spivey, played by J.R. Ferguson, a grinning bear of cagey charm. A childhood pal, he came home rich from illicit gun running in the Middle East and now lives in a mansion with pet giraffes. Armed guards surround him, protecting him from a looming showdown with his fugitive ex-partner, Clyde Brattle, played by a sly Alan Cumming, oozing evil when he appears in the third episode. For a small border town, San Bonifacio has more than its share of Peyton Place romantic complications and Tom Clancy-level conflagrations. After screening 8 of 10 episodes, I'm not sure how or if it all ties together. But even at its murkiest, Briar Patch is furiously entertaining and wildly unpredictable. It's that rare thrill ride with smarts and exotic animals. Briar Patch, Thursdays, 10, 9 Central on USA Network. Star Trek Picard. For a relic, you're in excellent shape, a Starfleet doctor declares after examining Jean-Luc Picard, played by Patrick Stewart, age 79. And so, it would seem, is the 53-year-old Star Trek franchise with its latest spin-off, Picard. While I wish it didn't take 3 full episodes of heavy exposition to get the fabled Next Generation captain, later Admiral, into space, the crew of rogue fellow travelers he assembles is promising. Their mission is both exciting and inspiring as they search for a missing scientist who could lead them to a woman, played by Issa Briones, with a special and secret connection to Picard's beloved Data, played by Brent Spiner, seen in dream sequences. Stuart clearly relishes playing this stalwart leader as a rebel, dismayed by Starfleet's ban on synthetic androids after a sudden revolt that destroyed Mars 14 years earlier. With Romulan spies and assassins tracking their every move, the danger is real and the stakes are high. And yet there's a twinkle of Trek humor in a sign aboard an inactive Borg vessel. This facility has gone 5,843 days without an assimilation. Also, when Picard insists, "I never really cared for science fiction. I guess I just didn't get it." Speak for yourself, sir. Star Trek Picard, Thursdays on CBS All Access. And now we'll move on to Cheers and Jeers by Damien Holbrook. Cheers to The Circle for finding an upside to social media. Netflix's big brotherly competition locked players in tricked-out pads where they could only chat via messaging, texts, and status updates, resulting in real gems, like fan-fave Joey Sasso, and some really crafty catfishing. Jeers to Vanderpump Rules for its chronic staff defection. From the Toms, Schwartz and Sandoval, to Ariana, Stassi and Katie, it seems like there's nobody left working at SUR, the chic eatery owned by Lisa Vanderpump that the show is supposed to be about. But hey, at least Jax is still behind the bar making drinks and shady life choices. Cheers to The Outsider for drawing us into a nightmare. Even without the supernatural angle, HBO's adaptation of Stephen King's novel of the same name, about a small-town baseball coach played by Jason Bateman linked to a terrible crime, is a haunting reminder of the horrors humans are capable of. And now we'll move on to our next article. Dangerous curves ahead. A fatal car crash sets the new season of The Sinner in motion. With Matt Bomer on board, the twisty thriller You Won't Be Able to Look Away, by Jim Halterman. We lost control, says a shell-shocked Jamie Burns, played by Matt Bomer, as he sits in an ER nursing a few scratches from a late-night collision. So buckle up, folks. What actually happened in that fatal car accident is just the start of the chilling mystery Detective Harry Ambrose, played by Bill Pullman, faces next in The Sinner. In the USA drama's two previous installments, the first starred executive producer Jessica Biel, Ambrose's case involved suspects who were both guilty of crimes and victims of unfortunate circumstances. Season 3 takes a darker turn. This time, I was interested in someone who knows what he or she is doing and knows it's wrong and engages with that ethical question, executive producer Derek Simon says. We show the inner struggle. That someone is Burns, a well-liked teacher at a New York City girls' private school who is soon to become a father with his loving wife, Leela, played by Parisa Fitz-Henley, known for Midnight Texas. Despite his seemingly idyllic life in suburbia, Jamie has emotionally checked out, Bomer says. He suffers from this profound sense of loneliness and spiritual disconnection that is leading to nihilism in his own life. In one telling scene from the February 6th premiere, the character places his hand precariously close to a red-hot grill in an effort to simply feel something. When former college buddy Nick Haas, played by a creepy Chris Messina from The Mindy Project, shows up at his door, the tension is palpable. For Burns, there's inherent danger in having Nick back in his life, Bomer teases. The pair's disturbing backstory, the real secret of the season, is woven into the tale as Jamie's life spirals. First assumptions are almost guaranteed to be wrong, Bomer warns, saying things are not black and white on this show. People are not good or evil. It's all about discovering what lies in between. Which brings us to wise, earnest Detective Ambrose, who's reluctantly being pointed toward retirement as he launches his investigation. Red flags quickly emerge, complicated by the unexpected connection he feels to Burns. He senses Jamie is deliberately masking details about the crash, Pullman says. At the same time, Jamie is also speaking about what it is to really be awake and alive in the world. That's the kind of thing Ambrose wrestles with as well. Simons calls the men shadows of each other and hopes viewers relate to the complex, tortured Burns, however unsettling that may be. Bomer certainly did. This is the deepest I've ever had to dig, the white-collar actor says of the role, and the dirtiest I've ever had to get. The Sinner, Thursdays, 9, 8 Central on USA Network. And we'll move on to our next article, which is a tribute to Jim Lehrer. Jim Lehrer, 1934 to 2020. Longtime PBS NewsHour anchor Jim Lehrer, whose modest demeanor and commitment to quality, in-depth journalism made him a welcome news staple for decades, passed away on January 23rd at age 85. Best known via 36 years of news analysis and interviews for public broadcasting, most notably working alongside his friend Robert McNeil on the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour from 1983 to 1995. Lehrer built a reputation for fairness that led to his selection as sole moderator of all presidential debates in both 1996 and 2000. Lehrer also famously covered singular TV events, from the 1963 assassination of President John F. Kennedy to the 2001 attacks on 9/11. Written by Robert Edelstein. And we'll move on to our next article. The Biggest Loser Returns. Hard work pays off. Erica Lugo, Bob Harper, and Steve Cook of USA's rebooted The Biggest Loser are living proof of that sentiment. Here they give advice for surviving the reality competition and life. Erica Lugo. When now trainer Erica Lugo began tracking her weight loss on social media in 2013, she never could have guessed how far her fitness journey would take her. She dropped 160 pounds, and the ebook she self-published about her strategy, she says, sold 500 copies within 4 hours. People relate to me, and they want to hear what I'm going through, Lugo says. That's her approach as a trainer on The Biggest Loser, connecting personally to each of the 12 contestants. I will cry the same tears. I have hated the same burpees that they've hated, she says. My goal is to capture their hearts. If you do that, they're going to give you 110%. Bob Harper. I really enjoy telling people what to do, former Biggest Loser trainer Bob Harper jokes about fitness instruction. After bouncing back from a 2017 heart attack, the 54-year-old returns to host the new incarnation of the reality TV phenomenon. Harper says he always aims to be realistic with the show's contestants. I try to give people the cold, hard facts in the beginning, he says. But he admits, I've always had an optimistic way of looking at people when they're trying to reach their goals. It can be really difficult, and I have the ability to see into their future. Steve Cook. Fitness has always been a big part of trainer and athlete Steve Cook's life. At age 23, Cook traded his fading NFL dreams for a growing interest in training, helping his father lose 80 pounds. I love pushing toward a goal and achieving it, he says. He sees his role on the series as that of a coach working to inspire and motivate contestants. His method? Concentrating on the basics. I try to keep it simple, he explains. I don't like to overwhelm people. You can get a great workout doing the simplest of exercises. And there's a sidebar. The Biggest Loser. Craving change? Try these 5 tips from the series' trainers and host. Diet. Sorry, you can't outwork a bad diet. A lot of people believe that if you're constantly working out, you can eat whatever, trainer Erica Lugo says. That is so far from the truth. Exercise. The first step is the hardest, especially if it's stepping into the gym for expert help. Exercise can be intimidating, trainer Steve Cook admits. Go to the gym to learn what to do. Positivity. Speak positivity to yourself out loud, Lugo suggests. Pick a time of day or a marker, like a coffee shop you pass on your commute, and use that as a trigger for daily affirmations. Persistence. Keeping the weight off is even harder than losing it, but it's just as important, says host Bob Harper. Diet and exercise are going to be part of your life for the rest of your life. Accountability. Here's a pro tip from Cook. Studies show that if you tell your family or friends about your goals, you're going to be far more likely to achieve them. The Biggest Loser, Tuesdays, 9, 8 Central on USA Network. And we'll go ahead and move on to the TV highlights for the coming week. Monday, February 10th. Bull. The baby is coming. We repeat, the baby is coming. If you've been impatiently awaiting the birth of Dr. Jason Bull's first child, played by Michael Weatherly, you are not alone. When we last saw the trial consultant's pregnant ex-wife, lifestyle maven Isabella Izzy Colon, played by Yara Martinez, in a November episode, she was 7 weeks from her due date and already talking about getting the science project out of her belly. Tonight, the happily reunited and admittedly terrific couple are at that moment in the pregnancy where they are just focused on seeing it conclude so they can get to the good part, the birth of their baby and the beginning of their lives as parents, says executive producer Glenn Gordon Caron. Bull, he adds, is trying to be all things to all people, supporting Izzy while also continuing to work on the case of a doctor accused of bribing his way into college. While Caron is mum on how Izzy's labor will progress, we do know the couple, who divorced years earlier after grief over her miscarriage tore them apart, then reconnected, if you will, at her father's funeral, will have a girl. A flash forward at the end of September's season 4 premiere showed their daughter 27 years in the future. Grown up and pregnant with her own child, she was celebrating New Year's Eve with Bull and her uncle Benny, played by Freddie Rodriguez, who is Izzy's brother and Bull's best friend. The real question, besides the name, is will the delivery make us laugh, like Bull's recent efforts to master a baby sling, or cry? Something tells us to expect both. Written by Mandy Bierley. Bull, 10, 9 Central on CBS. Tuesday, February 11th. For life. Rooting for the underdog is a treasured TV tradition, but in this earnestly compelling legal drama about a jailhouse lawyer working to secure his own and other inmates' freedom, the hero seems more like a pit bull. Settle down, know my place, is that what you mean? Snarls Aaron Wallace, played by a forceful Nicholas Pinnock, to a judge who's trying to contain his outbursts during his very first trial. By this point, the viewer already empathizes with Wallace's rage and frustration. 9 years into a life sentence on false charges that cost him a livelihood and a family, he has earned a law degree but faces considerable obstacles from a broken, corrupt legal system. Even the prison's progressive warden, played by Game of Thrones' Indira Varma, will encourage him only so far. She urges Wallace to play the long game and establish his courtroom credibility before taking on the DA he blames for his captivity. But Wallace isn't willing to bide his time, and for life, gains dramatic urgency from Pinnock's powerful portrayal of an impatient man not above bending the rules when the odds are stacked so heavily against him. I've got a way to fight back, and you can be damned sure that's what I'm going to do, he tells us in his opening voiceover. Damned if you don't believe him. Written by Matt Rausch. For Life, season premiere, 10, 9 Central on ABC. Wednesday, February 12th, Survivor. We asked host Jeff Probst for a few words to describe Survivor's blowout 40th season, where 20 ex-champs do whatever it takes to win $2 million, double the usual prize. His list: brutal, entertaining, surprising, triumphant, exciting, vulnerable, electrifying, and relentless. See what he did? The first letters spell out best ever. In Winners at War, the field ranges from fan-fave cancer survivor Ethan Zone of 2001's Africa to shrewd 28-year-old Nick Wilson of 2018's David vs. Goliath. For Probst, one of the most interesting questions will be if there's an old-school versus new-school battle, and whether the new currency, fire tokens, can buy an in on the opposing side. Written by April P. Bernard. Survivor, season premiere, 8, 7 Central on CBS. Friday, February 14th. The Young and the Restless. Emmy winner Eric Braeden has played ruthless mogul Victor Newman for 40 years. Y&R celebrates the milestone with 3 Victor-centric episodes, starting today and continuing Monday. The Young and the Restless on CBS. Check local listings. Saturday, February 15th, today's sports pick, NHL hockey. Stadium series, Los Angeles at Colorado. At Falcon Stadium on the campus of the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, Anze Kopitar and the LA Kings face off against Nathan MacKinnon and the Colorado Avalanche in prime time. NHL hockey, 8, 7 Central on NBC. And Sunday, February 16th, Outlander. Season 5 of Starz's time-traveling romance begins joyfully for Jamie and Claire Frazier, played by Sam Heughan and Katrina Balfe, who are decked out in their 1770s finery to watch daughter Brianna, played by Sophie Skelton, wed love Roger, played by Richard Rankin, in a touching ceremony. But let's not forget the British crown has tasked Jamie with capturing and killing his godfather, Rebel Murtaugh, played by Duncan LaCroix, if he wants to keep his land grant in the North Carolina colony. The duo preview the drama ahead. What's the biggest danger the Frasers face now that Jamie must fight for a side he doesn't want to be on? Katrina Balfe. How to play their chess moves so they get through it unscathed. Sam Heughan. And protect the people they love. As their family grows, it's harder to look after everyone. Are they loving their new house at sprawling Frasers Ridge, though? Heughan. If it ever gets finished, Jamie's always drawing up new plans. Balfe. Jamie's never there. I just want to clarify this myth that Jamie built the house. We see Claire doing a lot of stuff. Watch the show, take notes. I want a list by the end of the season. Heughan. Jamie's off dealing with politics and Claire's trying to work in her home surgery, but you always see them come back to each other. They need that contact and that support. There's great scenes where you see them just sitting down and working through it all together. Balfe. There's still a lot of passion between them. We have one big feisty fight, which was fun to film because we don't get to do that very often anymore. What else can we look forward to? Heughan. Jamie's trying to sculpt Roger into a man of his time, a man that he thinks is deserving of his daughter. Balfe. In flashbacks, we revisit Claire in the 1960s, dealing with the death of first husband Frank. There are beautiful scenes in the hospital where Claire works and with Brianna. There's a little horror film we stick in, episode 3, as Claire and Jamie visit the Beardsleys, an interesting family. Heughan. It's such a huge season. The finale is enormous. Written by Kate Hahn. Outlander season premiere, Sunday, February 16th, 8, 7 Central on Stars. And that's all the time we have for this week. My name is Leah Trinidad. Thank you for joining me for the TV Guide magazine program. Stay tuned for Soap Opera Stars coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona. And remember, if you missed any part of this program, you can access it on demand at sunsounds.org and click broadcast info and audio. Have a wonderful afternoon.